Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters. Hello, and welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, brought to you by Procurated. On this week's episode, we are joined by four former chief procurement officers from Government Sourcing Solutions, including Jane Benton, the former CPO of Arkansas and the University of Arkansas, Jason McDonald, the former CPO of Long Beach and Fresno in California, Mike Smith, the former CPO of Illinois, and Jason Souza, the former CPO of Alaska. Together, they sit down and have a really interesting Q&A conversation based on questions from our audience about how the procurement professionals who make the biggest impact are the ones who are strategic thinkers, who are curious, who are creative, and are thinking differently on a day-to-day basis about procurement. In this episode, they provide a ton of practical advice about how to think about the problems that are facing procurement folks day-to-day. They also give some of their recommendations about the type of education and resources that they would advise tackling for both up-and-coming new procurement professionals and seasoned vets who are just trying to get a leg up and move to the next stage of their career. So really interesting stuff from everybody on the team today. I hope you enjoy this one. We're going to go ahead and jump right into the questions. What skill set really makes a procurement person invaluable?
Well, I think as we talk about this idea of what makes a procurement official invaluable, it's going to depend a little bit on the agency or the audience. A state-level procurement official may have a different set of demands and needs on them versus a local and municipal, and distinguishing that between higher ed and K-12. From my own experience, I would argue at the municipal level that it's less a specific skill. It's more the ability to continually reprioritize and adapt to the politics. The phrase of all politics are local definitely affects cities and counties more quickly. The mood or the direction can change rapidly, and that has an immediate impact in procurement and purchasing. So I think it's the ability to, it's a combined ability to reprioritize, to be flexible, and then continue to have sort of a strategic direction underlying, even in light of constant change and constant pressure.
Yeah, Jason, I agree with that flexibility, the ability to quickly adapt to change. But on top of that, too, just in this current environment, I think the courage to challenge the traditional or conventional thinking, and someone willing to take a little bit of risk and willing to take on a new approach to solve the day's problems. And someone that we've all heard the phrase, well, we've always done it that way. Well, that maybe you can't do it that way right now. You have to think of a new way of doing it. And I think that skill that's needed is someone to be able to come in and say, let's think innovative and creative, and let's think of another way to do that. And don't think that conventional thinking of we have to do it this way. There's a lot of ways to solve that problem, and let's come up with a new way to do it. And, so one skill is, surround yourself with great people that have those great ideas and that creative thinking and solve those problems in that manner.
I saw a recent survey that came out. I want to say it was from SAP, but it was saying that state and local managers are actually starting to get a little more, not worried isn't the right answer, but they're noticing that productivity is an issue, and not because the people are like per minute or per hour are being less productive, but because there's being more put on their plates. So like you might've had a very specific thing that you did every day or every third quarter was the same as it was the year before. But now with the new environment, procurement folks are being asked to do a lot of different things that might not have been in their classic job description 2 years ago. Is that something you all have been seeing and talking with different governments?
Well, one of the things, I mean, I think we see it, but one of the things that I know today that I wish I had done better before is being more strategic and getting out of the day in to day out things that deviate from what we should be doing, and really spending the time, even if that was on the weekend, I should have spent more time really thinking about contracts and things I could put in place. So to alleviate a lot of that, not only would it have helped myself and our staff, but it would have helped our end users to already have a good contract mechanism put in place. I really wish I had really understood that concept more, and I think people struggle with it. And we do hear all the time, I'm so busy. And I'm thinking, because you're really busy digging a ditch and filling it back up, and you dig the same ditch tomorrow. And I know what that looks like because I've done it. So I think being more strategic and really understanding what that means to you long term is very helpful. I think an important personality trait that I look for is curiosity. Is a person curious of why are we buying that? What are we going to use it for? How are we going to end up salvaging it when, at the end of life, looking at that total cost of ownership? But I also think being a problem solver, great procurement people are problem solvers. They are creative. Like Mike said, they're creative. They're looking for different solutions. So that curiosity lends them to listen to other people, listen to podcasts like this one, listen, and it helps them think differently.
I would, you know, following on to that, just that the curiosity aspect, I think, is huge. It's hard to break out of, you know, we've always done it this way. That's comfortable. That's what people want to do. You know, it's hard to break out of that. But once you start getting people to ask why, and can say, oh yeah, why do we do that? Do we need to do that? Can we get rid of it? Can we do it a different way? You know, you can build on that. And, you know, looking down the road, thinking about skill sets that I think are going to become more helpful. There are some, you know, along with emotional intelligence and those kind of soft skills that go with procurement, I do see some kind of technical skill sets down the road for procurement. As we automate things, as we, you know, treat procurement as a more strategic event that happens within a government, you know, skill sets like, you know, hey, we're getting tons of data every day out of our e-procurement system, out of all these various, you know, automations of processes that we've put in place. We've taken advantage of technology. We've taken things off of the day-to-day procurement officer's plate. What now comes back onto that plate to replace it? Well, now what to do with all this data? How do we slice and dice it? And we should own that as procurement officials. We shouldn't, you know, outsource that to a data analytics department in a different agency. That should be ours. Project management and, you know, treating these procurements as a, you know, knowing how to go into it in an organized way so that you don't end up filling in the ditch that you just dug. You know, you want to always be moving forward. And as you're doing all of that, you know, continuous improvement skills so that you can ask why and make those improvements. I do see, you know, some skills like that. Each of those skill sets have a backing to it, a framework, certifications, coursework that you can take. And, you know, I think as we look 3, 5, 10 years down the road, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, those types of certifications come into play for procurement officials.
I was going to add, weaving a little bit together what Jane and Jason offered, is I think both of those responses have an element of really starting to identify what the staff needs to look like. What's the hiring? What's the people development skills? You know, there's got to be a balancing point between that experienced person who has 20 plus years of experience, and they are a little bit molded in, that's the way we've always done it. And they have to be balanced with that person who does everything on their phone, can find that information, and is able to technologically get those answers more adeptly, and really meld those two teams together. And I think, you know, there's some degree of grooming, and there's some degree of preparing for that transition, a little bit of succession planning. And it's also anticipating what we're all finding in public service as a whole is sort of the ongoing pressure of the silver tsunami. The retirement folks that are getting ready to leave or have left, and replacing that expertise, you know, I think Jason said it well, you've got to have some innovation, you've got to have some new blood to that conversation, but you also want people that know how to do the work. And so that's a fine line balancing point for a chief procurement official of any kind to start that process.
Yeah, and Jason, so you brought up a great point about the amount of data that we have now and are going to have in the future. And I think a key skill set that is needed now and in the future is just that ability to take all of that data, to understand all of the stakeholders that procurement deals with, and merge all of those together and have someone that can identify those critical issues with that data, apply it to those stakeholders and say, what do we really need to focus on? And I think you said or alluded to, what can we stop doing? And to Alex's question about, you know, the procurement's doing more and more and more, I think that's a key question. That's a question I ask my staff over and over. What is it we can stop doing? If you're too busy, what is it you can stop doing? What process or thing can we stop doing in the process that we don't no longer need to do? So that ability to identify those critical issues with all the data and all the stakeholders, and what that leads to is being prepared for what's next. Taking that data, taking those stakeholders and say, using that skill set to say, what do we need to prepare for next year and the year after, and be prepared for what's coming, and being proactive instead of reactive to what we need to look forward to.
Yeah, this is a really interesting conversation. I've been reading lately about the concept of like deep work versus shallow work, which seems like it's been getting picked up in a lot of governments lately. And it's the idea that we talk about technology and automation and taking like moving from like administrative tasks, like filling the filing cabinet, over to things like e-procurement. And the really interesting aspect of technology, I think in the short and long term, is where can you use it to take those shallow tasks that are just, or you do them every day, or you have to do them every single month, and automate those so you're not having to think about them or stress about them. They're not taking up space in your head, and allow people to focus on those strategic tasks. So you actually are getting deep into projects. You're thinking about a problem for 2 hours straight instead of getting distracted by pings in your email or things like that. And then that just kind of naturally starts to solve the problem of people like skill sets and people being engaged and involved with their work. So like if you wake up in the morning and you're like, hey, we're going to probably solve some problems today, it's going to be interesting and engaging, and we're going to be communicating and having discussions or maybe even arguments. And it's going to be like, we're going to actually get to the root of some of these issues versus I'm going to enter 300 rows of data today. It's obviously that sometimes that still needs to be done, and there's a job that's not completely gone yet, but that's sort of an interesting dynamic that I think is changing for the positive.
Yeah. And one more thought, Alex, and I think we all agree with this, is as a procurement leader too, and I think Jane kind of mentioned this, is you need someone who has some, you know, compassion, or if that's the right word, for people in this current environment where, you know, they're working remotely, they might have childcare issues, or there's health concerns, or you know, schooling going on. We need someone who can keep up their spirits, that leader who can keep up the spirits of their staff, who can remain positive, and who can help keep their team positive. And everything else will hopefully fall into place after that. But you need that positivity from your leader as well. And that, I think that's a skill that that's necessary in a procurement leader too.
Well, you know, really it's coaching, right? We spend a lot of our time coaching and being a cheerleader for that. I think I want to go back to something Mike said about being a risk taker. I used to tell our agencies, you've got to be bold. You should be the expert for procurement wherever you are. So when people contradict a good procurement practice, you need to stand up for that. We cannot cow to that, whether it's a supplier or your management or whoever that is. You need to be educated and knowledgeable enough to be able to do that, because no risk, no gain. We cannot live in a risk-free world. And honestly, and I've been in procurement a long time, we all have, but I'm sure because of my age, longer than all of y'all, but I don't ever recall having an issue, a problem with something where we did step out and take a risk that we cannot repair, right? I mean, there's always a solution. And I always told the staff, we can always go back to the terrible way we were doing it if this fails, but don't be afraid of failure. I mean, to me, not to try is to fail. It's, you've mm-hmm. got to keep pushing, and you cannot be afraid to do that.
Absolutely agreed. It reminds me, one of, as we were, going through and looking at processes and looking at things that we could improve in Alaska when I was with the state, one of the shining examples of this was a person, hey, walk us through your day. Well, first thing I do is I come in and there's a report in my inbox, one of those big dot matrix printed reports. The first thing I do is I pick that up and I take it over to this filing cabinet and I open the filing cabinet drawer, take the old one out, put the new one in, put the old one in the recycling bin, and then close the door. Why do you do that? Because that's what I was taught to do. Who reads that? I don't know. Do you need to do it? I don't know. Why don't you try not doing it for a day or two and see what happens? Sure enough, no one missed that report. And it's stuff like that. I mean, happens thousands of times a day across all of our agencies. And yeah, it is just, just try it. Just try not doing something that you don't know why you're doing it, or try a better way. It can't hurt.
That's right. You can always go back to the terrible way you were doing it.
Exactly. If you really like that report and you like it in that drawer and it brings you comfort and joy, okay.
And I think there's something to be said for enabling those employees to make that mistake. As the manager or supervisor or chief official in that area, you want to give people the ability to say, walk into your office, here's the problem. I've got all the problems identified. I need you to bring me solutions and bring me recommendations. Don't just flop them down on my desk to make a choice. I can do that. But I always sort of reference that Steve Jobs quote, which is, we don't hire smart people and tell them what to do. We hire smart people and ask them what we should do, and have that same amount of faith and trust in the people that you're bringing on. And maybe that's where the time investment needs to be made, is before they're there, that you're vetting their thinking process. You're less concerned about their procurement or purchasing knowledge, but how do they think? Can they bring that thought process to the process here? And, identify efficiencies, really make improvements in workflow. Mike mentioned, the increased amount of work. In my opinion, it's unlikely the increased amount of work decreases. So you have to find efficiencies in the process, or you have to find, as Jason pointed out, the reports that don't need to get filed and processed. What happened? What happens if it doesn't get done? And we'll find out. We'll just go back to doing it. But if nothing happens, then we're going to stop doing it. And I think those are that example of being bold, as Jane pointed out. Be challenging. Be challenging to say, why do we do that still? And especially if you're new, you have that, I always say, the first year luxury of why. Why? Just ask all the time.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jason. And speaking of being new and kind of learning as you come on board, one of the questions we also had for you all is, are there any books or resources or different places that you looked when you were either coming up on your career, maybe even recently have taken advantage of, that you would recommend to somebody who's either trying to get their footing in procurement or really trying to expand their career the way that they think about things?
Well, from a local or municipal level, I would certainly emphasize the associations, either the state association or the national, the NIGP in that case. I'll let my colleagues speak about NASPO and their reach, but NIGP is an amazing resource, not only as a website, but as mostly the people that have the experience, that have the training, that have the background, now certifications and courses that lead to other certifications. So investigate, if I were new in procurement, that would be somewhere I'd tell people to start. And that gives you a lot of leads and resources to find out about, not only online classes, but new positions, other experts, consulting. It's just a wealth of information from a public purchasing standpoint.
I was going to say that one of the ways when I first started in procurement, really learned the foundation blocks. I see so many procurement people today that haven't been in procurement long. They're learning to work the process, but they don't understand the fundamentals. You've got to understand the fundamentals. And if you ask people about terms and conditions, they're like, well, we just pulled a template over. Well, you've got to understand it. If you're writing a solicitation, you have to understand everything that's in that solicitation. I don't care where you pulled it from, because if you don't understand it, how are you going to expect that supplier to understand it? And then really listening when your suppliers come back and say, for example, that termination for convenience clause, I can't get funding on that to buy that piece of equipment for you. Will you please remove it? And I've heard procurement people say, well, our attorneys develop these T's and C's and we have to have them. Well, what's the old famous statement we always say? Everything is negotiable. Now, there are a few statutory things that are not negotiable, but really understanding the fundamentals of public procurement. And I think it goes back to studying for my certifications. But, you know, I love to listen to podcasts. I walked in the state office one day and said, well, I'm an official procurement nerd. I've been listening to podcasts on office supplies on the way into work. So just learning all you can. But I go back to what Jason said about the organizations at the state and national level. I've never called on anybody that did not help me. Every person that I've ever met in public procurement, and that's the difference between public and private, is they're so willing to help you. There's just so much information to be shared going to these meetings if you're paying attention, but you have to get involved and not sit on the back seat. It's just so much you can do, I think.
You know, actually, you bring up a really good point, Jane. That you mentioned that difference between public and private. One of the first things I did when I was appointed chief procurement officer was I reached out to our 5-6 largest companies in Alaska and arranged meetings with their procurement director, their chief procurement officer equivalent. You know, and part of it was to find out, hey, is there something we can learn from the private sector that we can adopt in the public sector? And what ended up happening, you know, I was blown away as much as I was learning from them. And they were in the same, very helpful. I think it's just, it might be a procurement trait, you know, whatever the you know, personality type that is drawn to supply management or procurement. But they were super willing to share, you know, their best practices, their lessons learned. But they also were very interested in what we were doing, what I was doing with the state. They were jealous that we had, by and large, they were jealous that, you know, wow, you have rules that people have to follow. That's blown away. Oh, you have, they have to do that? That's crazy, you know? And so those conversations were amazing. And so I just say that, you know, expand, you know, look at public sector resources, maybe reach out to some private sector CPOs in your area, or, you know, it never hurts to try. You might learn something, you might not. But I did want to bring up one book that was kind of life-changing for me, just in terms of, you know, how the brain works, especially with procurement. But it's called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. And the author is Robert Cialdini. I actually had to look that up, how to pronounce his last name, but Cialdini. It just walks through a bunch of scenarios where you might encounter being influenced by a supplier or an ad agency, all these scenarios and kind of things to watch out for. But it was a great introduction for me into a bunch of kind of psychology related books that delve deep into why procurement happens and like what happens in a negotiation or in a selection or, you know, as you walk through the different evaluation processes in a procurement. So I just want to make sure I shared that as well as a resource for anybody interested in that kind of brain activity.
Well, Jason, that's interesting. I'll expand on that a little bit because I start thinking along the same lines as a couple of thoughts that are a departure from procurement, actually. One is I would suggest anybody who starts in procurement at a buying staff level or even at a leadership level, that if you really want to do a great job and you really want some resources or some education, try to find a writing course to take on how to be a good writer. Because what you're going to find yourself doing is writing solicitations, writing specifications, writing a lot, and to be able to clearly articulate exactly what your organization wants in a product or service is going to become very, very important. You won't realize it until the end of that solicitation and you get a list of questions or a protest or whatever, but being able to clearly articulate what you want will be very important. So having that writing skill will become invaluable to you as you move forward. And the second is, and I'm going to go back 35 years here or plus, but and you may have heard of this book because it was popular for many, many years, but it was called In Search of Excellence. And it was a book that in a job years and years ago, I don't know, for whatever reason, we looked at, and it was called In Search of Excellence. And it really just examined businesses, nothing to do with procurement. It examined how these big companies, small companies were successful. And, you know, some of the principles may not be applicable 35 years later, but I always remembered a couple of the examples in there. They examined Apple when it was in early years, Disney, why they were so successful, 3M. But one sticks out in particular, and it was a small grocery store, I think in Connecticut. And what they did to make themselves, it's not a national chain, what they did to make themselves one of the most successful grocery stores in the entire country by far. And what they did was they listened to their customers. And bottom line, they made small changes in the way they sold the products in their store based on suggestions from their customers. They listened. And those little changes made all the difference in the world. And what it really taught me was that just through innovation, creativity, doing something different, taking a risk, you can solve problems. You can actually solve problems you didn't even know you had, right? And I think that's a lot of governments don't even know they have a problem. So you can might be able to solve a problem you don't even know you have by taking a risk. And, or you can turn something that you think you're doing well into something great. And that always stuck with me 30 years later, that one little grocery store, how they were able to take something very small and make it an incredibly successful venture. So I just wanted to share that.
Mike, that makes me think about that. I think, and I've read a lot of management books, particularly when I got into management, because nobody teaches us how to be a manager, and or at least they didn't me. And I think reading and finding a good mentor to help, and I think it's even more helpful if they're not in procurement, that, you know, finding a good mentor that really can help you understand some of the trials and tribulations and the wonderful things that can happen managing and coaching people, including yourself, because, you know, you're managing yourself at the same time. So that would be some good reading material too, if you've been or even want to strive to be in a management type position. You've got to start exerting those qualities that people are looking for, that self-initiative and managing mm-hmm. your own time, project management, you know, coming up with good solutions. So I think there's a lot of good reading materials. It's not so specifically geared to procurement.
Right.
I was going to add a little bit to Mike's comment about taking a good writing course. I think that's highly recommended if that's not a skill you possess or you want to refine or hone your skill. And what I would add to that is also, don't do more work on something that's already been done. You know, look at other existing contracts, look at RFPs, look at cooperative contracting, and you know, both for the best and for the worst. You know, look at what didn't work, look at disastrous projects, just understand how it got off track and understand what the, you know, what the vendor or supplier was responding to and why it ended up not being good for the government. And to go back on my own comment initially on the what would be a good thing to do. Also, I think we've all talked about it in some ways, volunteer with these groups. You know, get involved with NASPO. If it's early on and you don't know what you're doing, you don't know anyone, it's going to be amazing how many people you're going to find are in exactly the same spot. And then they may be your lifelong colleagues, you know, either nationally or locally or regionally that you work with. And they have a perspective that you're not going to get from anyone in your own agency, whether that's within procurement or outside procurement. They're going to be able to offer you a perspective from large agencies or small agencies or specialized agencies that you just don't get in your own building or in your own office. So I really encourage people to sort of grab on. That's kind of a scary jump sometimes. I'm new, I don't want to do anything, but that's the way people progress and advance within procurement very quickly.
You know, one of the things that I'm always amazed that doesn't happen, that I think because of my personality is very collaborative, that I've done over the years, where I lived and worked, there are other people doing the same thing. So if I work for the county and the city office is a block away, but the two never meet, they really don't even know each other. That I'm like, how can you not know the city director right down the street? Because we're all doing the same thing. And we talked in that earlier part about, you know, redundant work. If we're both, you know, listening for the same thing, that's such a waste to me, particularly if we're that close together in a city or county. But I know I worked at a university and we met about once every few months for lunch. Those procurement directors from the city, county, and myself, you know, in higher ed. And there were so many things that we learned from each other, but there were also things that we could put more piggybacking language in there, or even to do some true cooperative buying, because we were all buying the same things and nobody had enough staff to go around. So we've got to become more collaborative and really think, it goes back to thinking outside the box. And I know we've worn that statement out, so.
Well, and Jane, you make a good point. Beyond just the collaboration and the partnering, also think about the leveraging of volume, right? So between yourself and those three other agencies in that example, now all of a sudden you can move the market potentially, whereas individually all of those agencies would struggle with particular suppliers, especially in the commodities. So those are great examples. That's a really good opinion to have.
You know, it feels like the common thread in all of these is breaking down silos. Like think, you know, to throw out another cliche, right? Is breaking down the silos, but looking outside of what you would first think of when you need help with something or you want to do something. Don't look at just procurement related articles, look at leadership articles, management, you know, stuff like that. Reach out to your peers. One thing that I was always surprised didn't happen more along the lines of what you mentioned, Jane, is and what Jason has mentioned as well, is I'm getting ready to do something that issue an RFP for something the state's never, you know, done before. I bet somebody out there has. I bet I can use my favorite search engine or some tool to find an RFP or a contract that's been issued for that, even if they're not part of our association, but find the name of that contracting officer and call them and say, hey, I'm getting ready to do this. We're probably going to have the same, you know, suppliers in our competitive pool. What would you have done differently? What did you learn? I mean, it would take 15 minutes, maybe an hour if it's really interesting, but you could come away from that avoiding the same mistakes and making a better product at the end. And so, yeah, just thinking of outside of that silo. And I think government especially has a tendency to, you know, build that silo around you and think that we're the only people that have ever done any of this ever. And just thinking, getting away from that is a big deal.
Well, Jason, I think that story can be retold at all levels, of course, but I think what's interesting is the moment that department now comes to you and says, this is the only vendor in the whole world that does this. I think those conversations can immediately be, you know, you don't want to be a I told you so person, but you can be a I found these other solutions for very same or similar service or products just by asking. And so, you know, you can also be the conduit for good information by just doing that research. No longer, and I know as procurement, we all have a little bit of an itchiness when we talk about sole source or single source, that there's absolutely no other place in the world that does this or sells those. So I think sometimes that can be educational for you as well to say, you're right, there isn't. Or here's some alternatives that I found in doing one phone call. And really help to be a partner to your agencies or your requesters.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. This has been an awesome episode. I think people are really gonna get a lot out of it. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.